Hello and welcome to the Come Fly With Me podcast, where I discuss dream holiday destinations and career plans with my guests. I'm your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and today I'll be talking with the founder of Global Voyages, Dev Bojwani. Dev was born in India and then spent a number of years in Nigeria before completing his schooling in England. He then went on to study English and history at the University of Aberdeen, after which he spent some time working in the theatre and travel industries. Join me as we delve into Dev's early life, love of history, and why he felt compelled to start the Global Voyages magazine and website, as well as discover what he wants to see whilst in his dream destination, Portugal. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Enjoy the ride. Welcome to Check In, Dev. Where are we going today?
My favorite holiday would be wherever I would go with my kids. They quite like Portugal, and I like Portugal. I've only been once. I've been to Lisbon once, and I really liked it. And I think, you know, in an ideal world, it would be Portugal again, to, you know, see different parts of Portugal, because there's a lot to see, and you know, it's a very diverse country, even though it's quite small compared to Spain or France. Long haul, I like Canada, especially Toronto and Vancouver. I love the scenery in Vancouver, the Vancouver area. I also really like New Zealand, and I think it would be a great place to take kids. But it's just so far away. But we are going to take them to Australia and New Zealand when they're older, and, you know, when they're able to handle. I mean, we wouldn't fly in one go. We'd stop off somewhere and get a few nights rest and then fly out again in both directions. So, yeah, I mean, those are places I would like to take them. And finally, I would say India as well, because obviously that's my ancestral homeland. And I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that kids would see in India. But again, you know, they don't have the immune system to deal with the pollution and the, you know, whatever else you encounter in the third world, because it is the third world, you know, and as a parent, you've got to be very conscious of that.
Out of those four, what would be top of your list?
Probably Portugal, because it's closest. it's only a couple of hours to Lisbon, so, you know, that's doable, you know, and we've done it. We've taken the kids there before. And the problem with really long flights is the kids get really restless, because my kids are used to running around and, you know, climbing, you know, 3-4 flights of stairs. You cannot do that on a, you know, 11-hour flight to Hong Kong if you're stopping over in Hong Kong, or, you know, 11 hours to LA on the way to Australia and New Zealand. They will get really restless. So, it's, you know, value for money and the distance of Portugal wins on this occasion.
Whereabouts did you grow up, Dev?
I grew up all over the world, actually. I grew up in Africa. I was born in India, and I went back to India for a while. Spent my early to mid-teens there, and then I went to school in England. I went to uni in Scotland and lived there for a while after graduating, and then came back down to England. And I've been in England since 1999 or 2000, 1999 actually. So the last couple of decades I've been down here in England.
Now that we know a bit about Dev's early life, let's discover what started him off on his journey to creating Global Voyages. How was your time at the University of Aberdeen?
It was good. I mean, I wanted to go to a university as far away as possible from England, and Aberdeen is the final frontier. I thought, you know, let's go as far as possible and just see what happens, you know. It was either Aberdeen or Kent, University of Kent, Canterbury, and I didn't really like that university because it was a newish university, whereas Aberdeen University is quite an old university. When I left in 95, that was the 500th anniversary of the uni. So it's actually the third oldest uni in Scotland. It's obviously St Andrews, Glasgow, and then Aberdeen. So I like the idea of being at a medieval university. I really like my history. I've always enjoyed medieval history, and a lot of the structures are still there from the last few centuries, and it just makes it a more aesthetically pleasing experience. And yeah, it was interesting. I mean, getting used to the cold was a challenge, but the trick is if you stay indoors as much as possible in the winter, you'll be fine. Obviously it was nice to meet different people and socialize a lot more, because at boarding school you didn't really get a chance to socialize. The rules were pretty firm. You have to do certain things by a certain time. But at uni, you do what you want whenever you want. If you don't want to go to lectures, you don't go. And I have to say, I spent my first year not really going to that many lectures, but I made up for it in the rest of in the rest of my time there. Yes, I managed to graduate.
What did you study while you were there?
I studied English and history.
So that was a 4-year degree.
Yeah, Scotland. Well, I mean, you can do a 3-year degree, but you do your 4 years, you get an MA at the end of it, and then it's nice to have that, MA on honors at the end of your name when you graduate. So it's worth sticking around for that extra year. And the final year, they kind of leave you alone to just carry on with the research for your dissertation. So I enjoyed it. I obviously worked on a dissertation and then played sport for university, and just enjoyed my final year. I have to say that of all the years that I was there, the fun one was the best, because there wasn't that much studying. There was a lot more socializing and sports. So I guess that's what uni's for in a way.
You played a bit of rugby at uni, is that right?
I mean, I played in the freshers team my first year, but I damaged my knee, and I was out for a while. And then again, I started playing in the final year, played a few games. So it was nice to represent the uni. Not I wasn't playing with the first or anything. I played a handful of games with the second, but it was mostly the thirds. Nothing really serious.
Did you ever get a chance to go to a Scotland game while you were at uni?
No, because they're really expensive, and I just couldn't be bothered, getting the train down to Edinburgh and getting rubbish seats at Murrayfield. And because in those days Scotland only played at Murrayfield, they didn't play in Glasgow or Aberdeen. I mean, they've actually played a couple of fixtures at Pittodrie, which is the football stadium. Scotland played a couple of tests at Pittodrie. I think they played Tonga once there, but this was after I left Aberdeen. But no, we just watched it on TV in the Union, which was warmer for a start and cheaper. It was easy enough to get back to the halls of residence or my flat at the end of the night. So, never underestimate the appeal of watching a game at home.
As we leave the runway, it's time to hear how Dev got Global Voyages off the ground. You were drawn back to England. What were the reasons behind that?
Just work. I mean, I thought I've lived in Aberdeen for a few years after graduating. It's becoming a bit limiting now, so I came down to London to try my hand in theatre, because I was already involved in theatre up in Aberdeen. And you get to a certain stage, the theatre in Aberdeen, you can't really go any further. So I came down to London to try, and we put on some shows in London, which was really exciting. And then, you know, I realized that this doesn't actually pay the bills, you know, it's kind of a labor of love. So I got a job in the travel industry and worked in the travel industry for a good 10 years or more in different roles, which kind of explains, you know, how I ended up doing so much traveling and then wanting to look at it from a different perspective.
And what sort of role did you go into to start in the travel industry?
I started off doing your basic long haul sales, and then I moved into product development, which is kind of, you know, doing research on destinations, putting together a brochure. And by then, websites were becoming more prominent as a marketing tool. So, you know, helping with the website content as well, competitor research, you know, seeing what everyone else was charging. So, you know, that was different from sales because that didn't involve any selling, but it needed to be done so that we had material there that the sales staff could use. And, you know, before you knew it, 10 years just kind of whizzed by.
And is I take it that experience is a big part of the reason that you decided to start a travel magazine and website, is that?
Not really. I mean, no. I started the travel writing magazine, because I realized there wasn't one that was ethically inclined. You look at the other travel magazines, you know which ones I mean, and they're all kind of padded out with, you know, sponsored content, advertising, promotional features. And a lot of them have no issues taking money from questionable, you know, countries with questionable human rights records. And I just thought there has to be a magazine for people who really don't like, you know, to compromise on their ethics and who don't particularly want to go to some of these countries, you know, and people who just find advertising really annoying. Now, that having been said, I think if advertising is interestingly portrayed, if you can have a tie-in feature, you know, obviously the magazine has a no comps policy. We pay for all our trips and our stays and any you know, experiences that we want to write about. So if there was a way of, you know, getting a feature in the magazine that was linked to an advertiser's product, again, you know, an advertiser who shared the same values as us, then nothing wrong with that, you know, especially since it's not a comp, it's not a freebie, you're actually paying for it. So everyone benefits, you know, it's a bit of money for the advertiser, and the advertiser's then got a bit of money to spend on the business, and then you know, they advertise with you and you can help them expand, because Global Voyages, when it launches on the 1st of Jan, is launching worldwide. It's not just, you know, launching in Buckinghamshire, it's worldwide.
1st of Jan 2023.
On the 1st of January, the magazine will obviously launch, and the website will go behind a paywall, and it will be accessible only to subscribers. And we will obviously, you know, keep uploading content between now and then onto the website. We're going to put on a merch store on the website, you know, just to make certain products available to our customers, you know, products that are ethically sourced and don't rely on, you know, children working in sweatshops in China or Africa, you know, or Bangladesh. So, you know, we're quite selective about the products that we will keep on the merch store. The other thing I'm really excited about for the website is the fact that we'll be, you know, uploading our own
documentaries, you know, documentaries that we produce, and they will only be available to our subscribers on the website. So, you know, it's not so much a website. The magazine and the website together aren't really, I mean, obviously they are a magazine and a website, but I like to think of them as kind of an ecosystem for people who appreciate detailed writing or long form journalism. At the same time, you know, appreciate reading about travel, but not so much being into traveling for the sake of it or mass tourism. You know, I have a vast collection of travel books, but it doesn't mean I want to go to all these places. I just like reading about them. And I'm sure there are people like that out there, other people like that out there. You know, people who just don't want to turn the page and see yet another, you know, sponsored puff piece. You know, we don't do sponsored puff pieces. It's a work in progress, definitely, but it's beginning to take shape and it's beginning to have, a series of objectives.
If people want to subscribe to the magazine or the website, is that just a matter of going to globalvoyages.com? Is that right?
Yeah. Or, you know, they just drop me an email and I get in touch with them and, get to speak to them and find out more about them. So it's very personal. I'm not outsourcing this to a, you know, subscription line somewhere in the Philippines or India or something. You know, I'm handling that myself. So it's very personalized, because I want to know what the readers would like to read about, you know, and then I will try and, you know, get that kind of content in the magazine and on the website. Obviously, you know, within reason, if it's, say, an article about, you know, a resort in Spain, you know, Malaga or something, I probably wouldn't, you know, entertain that, as there are other magazines that can do that. But if it's something, you know, like really off grid, like looking for snow lions in India, and not so much India, but the Himalayas, then that would be a really exciting project to commission, you know, and then find the right people to write about it, find the right people on the other side to arrange it, because I know that there will be a number of people who want to read about that, you know. They may not necessarily want to do the same trip because it's, you know, hard work, but they would love to read about it. And ultimately, you know, we're writing for our readers. We're not writing for the advertisers or the travel industry. Far from it. We have no, we're not beholden to anyone in the travel industry.
And can you give us a little bit of insight into maybe what the documentaries might entail?
Yeah. One documentary I'm doing preliminary research on at the moment, it's not so much about traveling, it's more about history. It's the history of Delhi. I come back to Delhi, you know. So it's gonna be about, you know, how the cities, because there were, you know, apparently 9 different Delhis over the centuries, you know. The documentary, it's divided into 9 parts. So, you know, talk about each, each Delhi that existed over the years. So I'm hoping to, put together a lot of research, both here in England and in India on the ground. Hoping to get some really good footage when I'm out there. Because all the stuff's there, you just have to go and film it, and then you come back and you know, get the voiceover done. And then you hopefully get someone who's really knowledgeable about LE and really energetic. And then, you know, you've got yourself a good little, well, I say little, but it's not, it's 9 episodes, good documentary. It's never been done before. There have been like odd documentaries, you know, with a bit of, you know, content on Delhi, but never 9 entire episodes. So again, it's the first, and I'm really excited about working on it and bringing it to the screens, as they say. And there'll be other documentaries, you know, of European cities, you know, really quirky stuff. Like, again, I haven't really discussed it with anyone, but I'm sure once I put it out there, people will come up with ideas and say, look, I want to do this, I want to do that. Mikey, who you know, was recently in Toulouse in the south of France, and he went over the border in Andorra, but he's got some footage that he wants to upload onto the website. So I guess in a way that's our first documentary. It's already, you know, it's rough and ready, but you know, so we were kind of rough around the edges. You know, we're not slick and glossy like some of the other magazines. And this kind of vlog would very much be in character with, you know, the magazine on the website. So I haven't got the footage yet, but I'm looking forward to getting it.
You didn't go like straight into that after your 10 years in the travel industry, because you've also worked as...
Oh, no, I did. I worked in different industries after that. I took some time out to look after my parents who were old and unwell. And I spent a fair bit of time in India doing that. So I kind of moved back to India for a while. The idea for the magazine only came to me this time last year, actually. I thought, you know what? I mean, I was in a job then. It wasn't a particularly interesting job, you know, I just did it to pay the bills. But, you know, that's why most of us do these jobs. I just thought, yeah, let's see what happens, you know. So I launched the magazine, and one thing led to another, and you know, almost 12 months down the line, I'm pleased to say that you know, I'm working on a 2-year cycle. So because it's a quarterly magazine, that's 8 issues, and we've mostly got enough content for the first cycle. So issue number 2, which is January, February, March 2023, and issue number 3, which is April, May, June, almost complete. We're just waiting for a couple more features and we close them. And then, you know, I've already started work on issue number 4, which is July, August, September. So yeah, it's coming along nicely. You know, I just hope that people who read it and subscribe to it really enjoy it. Yeah, because it's not like the other magazines out there.
And what is the process like from getting the final edit from all your writers to actually publishing it?
There's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, because you'll get the first draft and you'll go through it and see, you know, what needs to be changed and send it back to the writer, and then the next draft comes in, and then because each draft that comes in takes it to a different higher level. So when you get to another level with the next draft, you actually look at it from a different angle and you see other changes that can be made, because ultimately every draft that you get, you try and enhance so that the final piece, which is the one that goes to print, is the best possible piece, you know. And I suppose another way of looking at it is, you know, if you're a sculptor and you're chipping away at a slab of stone, trying to get your masterpiece of a statue, and, you know, trying to get the right detail and the right shape and texture. So yeah, I mean, it just depends on what the writer is writing about, and, you know, how
in touch they are with the topic and how passionately they feel about it. All of these things, are factors in the final draft, towards the final draft, I would say.
In terms of recruiting writers for the magazine, how do you go about that?
I just advertise it. I was going to say in the press, but I've only done that once in a writer's magazine, which actually wasn't very cost effective considering the response. But I use the internet, I use various job sites, and they usually have had a good response. And I think as word gets around, people will say, you could just send in a pitch and see what happens, because one of the reasons I started the magazine was to make writing about travel more inclusive, because it's quite a cliquey industry. You kind of really struggle to break through because the magazines, have their favorites and it's really difficult to break through. And I thought, we can change that, we can bust the cliques wide open. So as I said in the editorial of the first issue, we're going to, use as many writers as we can, obviously on a freelance basis. And, that way we get a really good spectrum of experiences and talent, across the board from all over the world. We've got writers. I've got a writer from Nigeria, which is really exciting. A feature is in the April, May, June issue. We've had a couple of writers from India. It's been interesting. We're getting writers from their native land instead of, writers from the UK going out there and just scratching the surface. There is a huge difference.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what do you look for, specifically in your writers? In terms of, the writing standard? Obviously, you want them to know about a place, have good knowledge of a place.
Absolutely. Obviously, knowledge and, an emotional attachment to the place, that helps. Having ideas, coming up with different ideas for features, because the magazine is kind of driven by the writers. I kind of hold it together, but the ideas need to come from the writers. Obviously, I'm happy to put in my own ideas, but if a writer pitches an idea, that to me shows that he or she is aware of this theme or these themes and is probably passionate about them, and that is a great start. It's better than me suggesting something to them that they may think, I need the money, so I'll do it.
We've heard about some places featured in the Global Voyages magazine and website. Now let's discover more of the places that Deb has enjoyed travelling to.
In terms of your own travelling, what's the best place that you've travelled to?
I'd say, there are quite a few places in India that are quite rural, up in the north, up in the state of Rajasthan. Little villages, completely different from the big bustling heaving cities like Delhi and Bombay, and it's just nice to go there and completely switch off and just kind of speak to the villagers and get a chance to, I don't like using this expression, but I have to, soak in the history of these palaces and mansions. On the flip side, I like being in busy cities like Bombay and Delhi. There's so much happening culturally, artistically. And also, Delhi is a wonderfully historic city. You know, there are so many monuments there, really hundreds. I struggle to think of any other city in the world that has so many monuments. Obviously, Rome and Athens, yeah, definitely. But the monuments in Delhi, you know, span the breadth of a millennia, yeah, because the cities existed in different forms for centuries, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if each century has a monument representing it in Delhi. And the Archaeological Survey of India, the ASI, are constantly coming up with new monuments. You know, they're digging around the city and finding new monuments. Well, not new monuments, they're old. They've just been buried. So for, you know, a keen historian like myself, Delhi's a great place to visit.
We have arrived in Portugal. Let's find out what Dev wants to do while he's here, as well as what his plans are for the future.
Welcome to Portugal. What do you plan to do while you're here?
Just take it easy, you know, just depends on the time of year. Of course, if it's spring or winter, you know, just enjoy the weather, the clear skies, eat well. Food in Portugal is lovely and it's quite cheap as well. Catch up on sleep, yeah, if possible, you know, find out about a different culture, you know, one that I am not very familiar with, even though my girlfriend is Portuguese, you know, the children are Portuguese. So just really slowly peeling back the layers, you know, and finding out more.
Would Lisbon be the main place that you would go in Portugal, or would you venture?
Yeah, that's where we went last time, but we are thinking of going up to Porto, up in the north. I mean, there's so much of Portugal that gets overlooked. There's actually a feature on a really relatively undiscovered part of Portugal. The feature is going to be in the April, May, June issue. It's done and dusted. So, you know, we're looking forward to getting some feedback on that. But, you know, there's just so much about Portugal that hasn't come through in the magazines. You know, people talk about Lisbon, all the trendy restaurants and trendy bars, but there's so much more to Portugal than that. I've yet to read an article about the art galleries in Portugal or the museums in Portugal. It's like all that people want to... If you were to read the magazines, all they want, they would lead you to believe that people want to do in Portugal is get drunk and eat until, you know, they burst, which is definitely not the case.
And finally, what are your plans for the future?
Well, for the magazine, just keep putting out all the issues as possible, as many as possible. Of course, we're also going to put out free supplements. We're working on them now. One of the supplements is called Our Favorite Bookshops in the World. I'm really excited about that supplement because I love bookshops. And I'm hoping that the other writers will also share with us, you know, their favorite bookshops so that people once again start thinking about these bookshops and don't just rely on the main chains and Amazon. Nothing wrong with Amazon. I think it's fantastic. I use it frequently myself. Also, there is going to be a book for single women travelers. It's called Sydney for Single Female Travelers. The writer's already working on it. She's going out to Australia in March of next year to finish the research. We should hopefully be able to launch the book at the end of next year. So we've got more than one bun in the oven, as we, you know, as we say. So again, exciting times. We should also hopefully have another smaller book called
Italy's best independent hotels, that sort of thing, you know. So we're trying to stay away from all the branded stuff. Not that there's anything wrong with them. I tend to, you know, use the Holiday Inns and Hiltons, etc. if I need to, but, you know, if I don't need to, then I won't. So, yeah, it's exciting. You know, so much happening.
Yeah, it does sound very exciting. And yeah, it was a pleasure to have you on the podcast, Dev. Thank you very much.
I feel very, even though I'm not 100%, I still feel great that I got the chance to be on your podcast. It's very special for me.
That was Dev Bodhwani, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you had a good time. If you're interested in writing for Global Voyages, you can find Dev's contact details on the website theglobalvoyages.com, or if you just want to read some of the articles, take a visit to the website. I have been your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and it was a pleasure having you on board. Safe travels, everyone. Intertwining, the stitching up.